Good afternoon and welcome on into Kildare Focus. It is Monday the 5th of December 2022. You're listening to KFM. My name is Caoimhe Hearney and I will be with you until 3 o'clock today. Coming up on today's show, we'll be speaking to Ian McRae. He's a psychologist specialising in relationships and workplace relationships. He's also the author of Dark Social. He'll be telling us how to navigate a breakup in the digital age with social media. Can you ever really get away from your ex? We'll be speaking to Grainne Griffin, Director of Communications at the CCPC. More than two-thirds of us plan to use savings on Christmas presents this year, while one in four will borrow money to pay for Christmas. She'll be giving us advice as well on how to Christmas shop, how to get the best deals, and what to do if you need to bring things back. We'll also be speaking to Michael Taft. He's a researcher at SIPTU. Many of you may have heard people's social welfare payments could soon be linked to what they earned before becoming unemployed. That's under new plans going to Cabinet. We'll be speaking to Joanna Donnelly. Many of you may know her from Met Erin. She launched Alone's Share the Warmth campaign. Joanna is encouraging members of the public to take a few minutes out of their day to interact with their older neighbours and relatives in the run up to Christmas. And then we'll also be joined by another lovely weather woman, Evelyn Cusack. She'll be giving us the update on the weather to come this week. Met Erin has issued a winter weather advisory as an Arctic air mass is due in the coming days. Of course, if you do want to get in touch with the show, 0833 97 97 97, you can call us 045 898 999 or you can email us studio@kfmradio.com.
Kildare Focus with Caoimhe Hearney. Text or WhatsApp 0833 97 97 97.
Now, in the age of social media, can we ever really get away from our ex or indeed from a friend that we no longer want to be friends with? Joining me now on the line is psychologist Ian McRae. He's the author of a book, Dark Social, which looks at the negative side of social media. And he is here to join, he's joining us to tell us all about these things. Ian, good afternoon.
Yeah, good afternoon. Thanks for having me on the show.
Of course. So, Ian, can you ever get away from your ex now that we have Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, Snapchat, you name it?
Yeah, I mean, that's a good question, especially because it is more challenging, especially when in relationships, often when we have new relationships, we want to make more contact with people in every channel, on every platform. So sometimes we'll add them everywhere, talk to them everywhere and make them part of our lives and digital lives in every sense. So I think one of the things we have to do is be more deliberate about figuring out how we structure our communication, especially online on social media platforms, so we can figure out how, if we need to, we can also end that communication and kind of reduce those connections or reduce that person's influence in our online digital lives if that relationship ends. So I think we can, but we need to be more deliberate about how we do that. So sometimes it does involve muting people or disconnecting from people, unfriending them, whatever that looks like on that platform. But thinking how we want to do that and thinking how we want to structure our digital social networks as well as our personal lives.
Mm. And it can be really hard to do, Ian. I know here in Ireland, of course, I know you're over in the UK yourself. Here in Ireland, like, you know, you could potentially block your ex or, you know, mute him or whatever or her. But really and truly, you know, you're in the same kind of circles sometimes. You know, Ireland is quite small, small parishes, small towns. Your friends might be friends with your ex. So in that situation, what do you do? Like, how important is it to do this? Is psychologically, like, does it have a massive impact on you from moving on?
Yeah, it is. And I think that's why when you have the end of a relationship, whether it's a romantic, intimate relationship or even a friendship, it's good to have some sort of both structure and idea about how to end that. And having conversations to end a relationship can be really important and psychologically important to have some sort of closure to understand what the relationship was like previously and how it might be going forward. Because it could be that, again, you're going to be seeing people, you know, in the local community, in some of your online communities, you know, you might have mutual friends, family members, whoever. So figuring out how to define that relationship going forward after the end is really important. And you might have to have those conversations with your family or with your friends to say, okay, well, this person and I aren't romantically involved together, but we'll probably cross paths in various places and communities or in digital spaces. So doing that is really important because often you can't completely remove people from your lives, and you might not necessarily want to, right? You might want to have some sort of healthy closure and discussion to figure out how to end that relationship in a mutually respectful way, at least, so you can have some sort of conversation about either what went wrong or why it's not going to happen anymore. But doing that in a way that is conscious is really important. So you might say, okay, we'll still talk in these areas, but we're going to disconnect on these social media channels because we don't need to be seeing each other's posts or new relationships or new activities 24/7 all the time. The other reason it's important to do that is because your digital activity is affected by what you're doing, by your behavior online. So if you keep clicking on your ex-partner, ex-romantic kind of relationships profile, if you keep seeing their posts, you're liking each other's stuff, you're going to be kind of inundated with more of their content. So sometimes it's really necessary online to make a deliberate effort to reduce the amount of content that you're interacting with a former, you know, friend or partner, and making sure you're changing that online behavior to make sure you're seeing different stuff in your social networks.
And I think it's so important because, you know, even I had friends of mine who, you know, after breakups, potentially they were on, you know, Tinder or Hinge, and then they come across their ex on the social, you know, on that platform. And then that's so hard as well. So like, if you're still in contact with them and you think, oh, maybe there's hope for us to get back together, and then you see them on your friend sees them on this platform, it can be really difficult. Does it really hinder your progress in terms of like getting over someone if you do keep in contact?
Yeah, especially if you're in close contact, and especially if you're constantly seeing stuff from them that's not necessarily voluntary. It's just being shown to you by whatever platforms you're on. So sometimes it's really helpful to reduce or get rid of that contact for a, you know, short period of time while you're getting over the breakup, while you're establishing new relationships or making new friends or waiting until you're ready to date again. You close down that contact with the previous ex, hopefully in a respectful way, but temporarily, because when you're in a really emotional or volatile state where you're not processing information in the same way, whereas you're not able to think about the relationship as rationally with some distance and time and pause for thought, it's good to reduce that amount of information you're seeing from a previous partner in the short term. Then maybe later on in the medium or long term, you can reevaluate it, think about it in a different way, and you can kind of not reignite the relationship, but have a more conscious, respectful, you know, friendship or, you know, different type of relationship with them in the future. But while you're processing that information, while you need some time to figure out how you're relating to your friends and family and new social networks or different social networks, different relationships in a new way, it's good to have more time and more distance so you're not constantly having those old feelings reignited, especially in ways that are online and they're not things that you're trying to initiate. They're just shown to you when you're bombarded with information that might not be helpful.
Okay. And then in terms of like getting over someone, is it a good idea to, you know, you hear about the revenge bod, like, and all these kind of things that, you know, the Kardashians, of course, would put their best foot forward. Like, you often see girls, sometimes you can tell by someone's social media that they've just gotten out of a relationship because they have the good pictures up or they're away on holidays and they're posting in a bikini and blah, blah, blah. Is that a good idea? Like, should you be like, oh, yes, here's me? Or should you drop off and, like, you know, focus on yourself?
Yeah, I would say definitely it's more important to focus on yourself and your immediate relationships that you want to be building and strengthening. Now, I would say it really depends on the intention of that. So if you've just got out of a relationship that may or may not have been difficult, challenging, whatever you're trying to get over, it's good to do something different. It's good to have different activities, to try new settings, to try new things, meet new people, all of that. But it's really important to reflect on why you're posting that stuff online. So if you're really making an effort to get into a new setting, a new social group, meet new people, and your activity is related to that, to building new, stronger, positive connections, great. If it's about revenge or making someone jealous or kind of passive-aggressive communication, if you're still posting that for the previous person about the previous relationship, then it's counterproductive because you're still focusing on that other person. So it's not really going to be healthy for you getting over them. It's not going to be helpful. And really, if you're looking at the intention behind that, if you're trying to make someone jealous, you're still looking for a reaction for them. So if you want to move on and do different things and post that, great, but think about why you're doing it.
Okay. I know that you are, you specialize in workplace relationships as well, Ian, but what happens if your ex actually works with you and you have to work with them every day?
Yeah, again, this is one of the more challenging situations because this happens all the time. This is especially this time of year. There's often changes in relationships and patterns and stress, and Christmas and everything can be difficult and stressful, and things break down. People have issues, and then there's Christmas work parties. It's when kind of HR has their busiest season sometimes. But that's why it's really important to structure and figure out how you want to manage your online communication. So sometimes if you have all of your social networks all in the same place, all in the same platform, let's say it's Facebook or Instagram, Twitter maybe, sometimes it's good to separate those a bit and have a different professional presence compared with your personal profile and your personal networks. So a bit of separation with those can be really helpful sometimes, because then it's much easier to separate your professional life with your intimate relationships or, you know, friends and family. So having some separation with that can be good. If you go through a really difficult breakup where everything is kind of interconnected and everyone's on every platform, then that's a good time to reflect on whether or not that's something you want to do in future and how you want to manage your digital relationships with your personal relationships, and if you want to draw some or create some new barriers sometimes between your professional and personal life.
Okay, so would you think that maybe you should have a different, like, Facebook or Instagram to be friends with people in work? Like, would that
be advisable? Absolutely, or use something that's designed for professional relationships like LinkedIn, or maybe there's a company platform that has a social network too. But I think it is good to distinguish them. And when you have any online profile or any online presence, think about who you're trying to connect with and what you're using it for. If you use them without thinking about them, that's when stuff can get really messy, because all of a sudden new connections and unplanned things, all sorts of things happen when you don't necessarily want someone, you know, from work seeing what you're doing on your personal life.
Okay, so I know obviously it's the season for Christmas parties, and many people will have attended Christmas parties. What if you went to your Christmas party and maybe you've done something really awkward or you've got really drunk? How do you deal with that? Like, how do you move forward in a professional manner? Like, do you need to apologize? Yeah, what do you see in your work?
Yeah, I've heard a lot of various stories about Christmas parties, and it tends to be the time of year that stuff happens, people make mistakes. Sometimes it's stuff that people can get past, and sometimes it has really serious consequences for either people's personal or career life. So one of the things I would think about before Christmas party season is to think about just generally what you're going to these parties to do, how late you're going to stay, how much alcohol you plan to drink, and see if you can head these problems off before they happen. And sometimes having a few of those personal and professional boundaries in that circumstance is good to think about, okay, how much do I want to disclose of myself in this particular work situation? It may be less than other people. Or, you know, how do you want to manage that? And then also thinking about what you're posting online or what you're posting online from the Christmas party. So think twice about those kind of things. Again, take some time, pause, and reflect about how you want to mix all of that activity. But then if something does happen, then you do have to consider the apology or what happened, why it happened, who it impacted, and have those conversations.
Okay. Ian McRae, psychologist specializing in relationships and workplace relationships, and author of Dark Social: How to Navigate a Breakup in the Digital Age with Social Media. Ian is saying here that you should probably delete your ex from all social media accounts and try and go into your own shell as much as possible. Focus on yourself, and that way is the best way to move forward. Ian McRae, psychologist. Thank you very much. Now, joining me in studio is Owen Beattie with an update. Owen, tell me more.
Yeah, so we've just got figures from the Department of Education. There are figures from the Department of Education confirming that as of the 1st of December, 13,323 Ukrainian pupils have been enrolled in schools across Ireland. Out of that figure, 8,522 of these pupils have been accommodated in primary schools, while 4,801 pupils have enrolled in post-primary schools. We have a breakdown as well of county by county. So here in Kildare, there are 134 Ukrainian pupils in primary schools and 81 Ukrainian pupils in post-primary schools. Around us then in Carlow, 103 in primary schools, 57 in post-primary schools, 1,222 in Dublin in primary schools, 678 in post-primary. In Laois, 106 Ukrainian children in primary schools, schools, 76 in post-primary, 269 in primary in Meath, 115 in post-primary. In Offaly then, it's 93 in primary schools, 35 in post-primary. And finally, in Wicklow, 288 in primary and 169 in post-primary. So in total, 8,522 Ukrainian children in primary schools here in Kildare. Or in Ireland, 134 of them in Kildare, 4,801 in post-primary nationwide, and 81 of those here in Kildare. New figures that have just come into us there from the Department of Education.
Kildare Focus with Caoimhe Harney. Text or WhatsApp 0833 97 97 97.
Now, before the break, I was asking, why does Kate Bush need to turn off the heating off? This is one of the jokes, apparently, that is going to be in Christmas crackers this year. She's running up that bill. It's kind of a dad joke that I think Paul Power would definitely appreciate. I don't know why I find it so funny, because it seems really obvious, but there you go. Now joining me on the line to discuss some bills is Grainne Griffin, Director of Communications at the CCPC. Good afternoon, Grainne.
Good afternoon.
New research now today has shown that 68% of consumers are planning to put their savings towards shopping for presents, food and decorations over the festive season, while 24% intend to use a form of borrowing. Is this a good trend, Grainne, or what way do you think it'll go?
Yeah, so when we're looking at what consumers are planning on doing over Christmas and what they're planning on spending and, you know, how they're going to get that money, what we're kind of thinking about is consumers' financial well-being. And one of the things that we look for there is, do people have short-term savings that they can dip into for these kind of expenses at Christmas and that they can build up again then afterwards? It's one of those habits that's just a really positive indicator of financial well-being. And in the case of like almost 70% of people, yes, they have savings. They are planning on using them for this purpose. So that's really good. Now, in terms of one in four people, they don't have that option. They don't have those savings, and they are going to use credit.
Okay. I mean, it's obviously good to use savings rather than, you know, get it out on credit. But it's probably not ideal to be using savings, you know, your backup money for presents. But now, how and ever, people obviously need to do it. Over one third of shoppers will spend an average of at least €1,000 with households with children are due to spend almost 1,600. Is this similar to other years, Grainne?
We found that it has, and generally it's gone up. It's gone up on last year, about 20% up on what people are planning on spending. So there is like quite a wide range of different plans, you know, for like 6% of consumers are going to spend less than 100. And, you know, even for quite a number, one in five are probably going to spend less than €500. But then at the other end of the scale, then you have households where they're planning on spending over 2,000. So on average, it is coming in around 1,200, but it'll come as no surprise to people really that children really bring the cost up, and that the average cost for houses with children rises to 1,600.
Yeah, of course. Like, if you wouldn't see €2,000 going if you had a couple of children and many presents to get, I'm sure there. Grainne, one in five obviously expecting now to spend more this year due to increased spending. But if you were to give some advice to people out there, you know, buying in the run up to Christmas, like buying online, what do people need to be aware of?
Well, I suppose before you start your Christmas shopping at all, we'd say to people to kind of make a list and a budget, work out what you need to get and what you can afford to spend on each item. And then if you are planning on using credit, to make that decision before you start shopping at all, rather than getting potentially being at the checkout online or anything like that and then suddenly getting tempted by a buy now, pay later option or using a credit card when you hadn't planned to. So that would be the first thing. But then also just beyond that, there's just general consumer protection advice that really kind of comes to the fore at this time of the year when we're potentially spending more money than we would be normally. So if you're shopping online, you have much stronger rights if you buy within the EU. And that means that you actually have to check and see where is that company based, because .ie isn't sufficient to trust that a company is based in Ireland. You have to actually go and look and see where the company is located. So okay. That'll be the first thing.
Okay. So .ie doesn't mean that the company is in Ireland?
.ie will usually mean that the company ships to Ireland. Right. So, you know, it is good to know, because I'm sure we've all been there where, you know, you find a new website online, you put things in your basket only to discover they don't ship to Ireland. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't actually mean that the company is based in Ireland, just marketed at Irish consumers.
Okay, so people need to do a bit of research there and see if it's an Irish company. Then if people do buy something like a faulty good, now I know in shop, is it the same in it for in-store as it is online if something's faulty?
So you have different rights in-store and online. So and generally with returns, they kind of fall into two categories. So the first one is your faulty goods. So no matter where you bought it, you'll always have the right to go back if something is faulty and get it, you know, replaced or refunded or repaired or whatever solution you might want. And that doesn't really run out. That can last for potentially up to 6 years in the cases of some goods. So if a fault emerges, you contact the trader as soon as possible and you look for them to put it right. But increasingly you often see that people just change their mind about goods and they order them to try them on and they want to send them back. And there is a big difference between in-store and online. So when you're shopping online, your consumer rights mean that because you haven't had the chance to actually look at the item in person, you'll always have 14 days from when it arrives to change your mind and decide that you don't want it anymore. And you've got that 14 days to notify the company, and then you've got a further 14 days to send it back. So one thing we would be saying to people, if you are buying things online and they're arriving now, it's a good idea to open the boxes and just make sure that everything is what you thought it would be, that it is, you know, exactly how it fits, or, you know, it looks the way you thought it was going to look, because your change of mind rights do expire. So don't just pop them away until Christmas. Have a look at them and see if they're okay.
Okay, yeah, good advice. So, you know, something that's bought there in the last week, by the time Christmas is over, potentially you're past that date then.
Exactly. And that's something for in-store purchases as well, is an awful lot of shops, they do have sometimes very generous returns policies at this time of the year. Like they might, for example, take change of mind returns into the middle of January and so forth. But they don't have to. So you do need to check if that's something they offer before you buy something in a shop. If you think there's a chance that somebody, you know, either that you're gifting the item to, or something that you're buying for yourself, if it's something that there might be a change of mind return needed for it, check to make sure that's something that's offered.
Okay, Gráinne Griffin, Director of Communications at the CCPC. Some great advice there. If you have bought anything online or of course in store, make sure you know you only have 14 days to change your mind online, and then a further 14 for the full refund. So online, be sure to open the boxes there. Gráinne with great advice. And more than 2/3 of us are planning to use savings this year to pay for presents, which is good news that people have that savings. Thank you very much, Gráinne. Now, high-earning workers who lose their jobs would be entitled to social welfare at more than twice the normal rate under proposals to radically overhaul the job seeker payment. Joining me now on the line is Michael Taft, researcher at SIPDU. Good afternoon, Michael.
Good afternoon.
Michael, tell us a little bit about how these plans would work.
The minister will be bringing proposals to Cabinet tomorrow to introduce a new pay-related element to the job seekers benefit scheme. That's the social insurance scheme that people can receive for up to 9 months after they've been after they've lost their job. What it would involve is that your payment, instead of a current flat rate payment, which everybody gets, there's no differentiation, it would now be related to your previous pay. It would be about 60% of your previous pay, with a cap on the total amount that you can receive, which is estimated to be about 460 euros a week. So for most people, they would be able to recoup a substantial portion of their pay to cushion the impact of losing a job. Right now, if you're an average earner, or even if you're in low pay and you lose your job, you come to a cliff edge. Your income falls down to a current rate of about 220 euros a week. That can be quite difficult for households to adjust to overnight. Secondly, what happens is that those people must reduce their expenditure in the economy, usually on discretionary items like non-essential retail, hospitality, recreation, with a pay-related element, with people's incomes being supported during the first few months of unemployment. That consumer spending can, be maintained, or mostly be maintained, which of course will benefit people who are working in those sectors, and would actually be collateral damage, if you will, if a lot of people lost their jobs and had to stop spending. Mm-hmm. So for the impact on the household, the benefit to the household, and the impact on the economy, and for hundreds of thousands of workers in these type of sectors, it's good news.
Yeah, of course, like if you have a mortgage and your repayments are X and next thing you lose your job and you only have €200 coming in, like that has all kinds of different implications, Michael, I'm sure, like that spiral down. So let's say I get a job for 100,000 and then a couple of months later I lose my job. Am I going to be entitled to this €450 or do I need to be in the job longer?
It looks like the government is going to introduce a scale of between 2 and 5 years.
Okay.
And you will only get the maximum amount after 5 years. Now, by the way, that makes it harder for a lot of people, especially low and average income earners, to access, and would be one of the most would be the biggest barrier to receiving a social insurance benefit, payday benefit, than exists anywhere in the EU. But even take somebody like 100,000, the maximum they could receive is still only €450 a week. So in terms of a percentage of their income, it's going to be quite small. But for those on low pay and on average incomes, it's going to be 60%. So you can see that proportionately, it benefits those on low and average income earners. So this is, and those are the groups, by the way, those income groups are the ones most at risk at unemployment. I know we've had news of tech workers losing their jobs, and it's unfortunate for them, and it's unfortunate for the economy and the industry. But by and large, higher income people don't have as high a risk of unemployment as those are in lower and average income groups. Mm. So it's not about, you know, people making a whole lot of money because they're at their higher income. It is about supporting people on low and average incomes. To give you an idea, for somebody on the low pay threshold, that means, you know, they're right on the threshold. 1 year or less means they're officially categorized as low paid. On that threshold, under the government's proposals, they would receive €100 more a week in social insurance benefits. That's going to benefit them hugely.
Okay. Has this model worked in other countries, Michael?
This model works in every other EU country except for Ireland. We are an outlier in not having a pay-related element to not only unemployment benefits, but for a lot of other social insurance benefits, like maternity and paternity benefit, parental leave. We now have a pay-related element to sick pay. The new sick pay arrangements coming in next year, people will get 70% of their income if they're off sick. So it works in every other country. It is not only to benefit, as I say, the households, which would experience this huge drop in income, but also it benefits the economy because it means that we can maintain consumer spending while people, you know, during this period of where you might hit a recession or you might have a shock, you know, a large number of people become unemployed. It helps the economy maintain consumer spending and get through the crisis. That's why it's called an automatic stabilizer. It helps stabilize the economy to get through a bad patch.
Okay, Michael, so we are slightly late to the party there, but Ireland is going to introduce it. High-earning workers who lose their jobs would be entitled to social welfare at more than twice the normal rate under proposals to radically overhaul the job seeker payment. Michael Taft, SIP2, thank you very much.
Kildare Focus with Caoimhe Harney.
Now, Alloan has launched its Share the Warmth campaign ahead of a difficult winter, and it's encouraging everyone to get in touch with their friends, their neighbours, their elderly friends and neighbours to make sure that they're okay, and especially in the run-up to Christmas. And joining me on the line is Met Aaron's Joanna Donnelly, who helped Alloan to launch this great campaign last week. Good afternoon, Joanna.
Hi, good afternoon.
Joanna, tell us a little bit more about what Alloan wants people to do this Christmas.
Yeah, do you know, of all the charities, they're looking for the least that will make such a big impact. Just your time and your awareness alone help people to stay in their home. People that are infirm or elderly or alone, as the word says, it's better if they stay in their own home. They prefer it. but with support, of course. And the loan offers that support through the obvious, you know, the physical needs, that maybe some help around the house, help to light a fire, help to put the Christmas decorations up, catch a mouse, whatever it is that comes at us at winter time. And even the bigger issues like checking out that the heating system is working, that it's safe, that the roof is insulated, all of these things that can be organised by a loan. But on a volunteer basis, what we need is the people that can reach the people. So from as little as an hour a week on the phone to talk to people, to see, to connect the people, to make sure that there is some connection between the people living alone in their own homes and the outside world, because it can get to be a very small world. And the thing that's quite poignant about this charity to me is that it can happen suddenly, and it can happen to everybody. It can happen to your loved ones. And it, we know it can happen to us. If we're lucky enough to grow old, we know that this could happen to us. And it's such a sad, and I think it tears at the heartstrings, really, doesn't it, that the idea of people being alone through the winter and through Christmas period, when everybody's celebrating and putting up Christmas trees, to think of anybody being alone is really hard. So the volunteerism that we do, that the befrienders, the people that reach out and connect with the people that are being helped by a loan, and also not just those, I get carried away here, the people that need help too. So if you are in need of some sort of connection, and it's not about pity, it's about the practicality of the situation, where you might find yourself alone through bereavement or God knows any sort of situation, to reach out to a loan, go on their website, alone.ie, reach out, and you could be a volunteer. You know, you might be the one in need of a connection, but you can actually be a volunteer too. You can make a phone call, you can reach out to your friends and neighbours, and just to make sure that everybody is connected this winter.
Yeah, exactly. Like, it doesn't, like you said, it doesn't cost anything. If you can drop into whoever lives in your estate or on your road, just pop in and see, are they okay? Even like bring them in some food or soup or something like that, Joanna. Like, it doesn't cost a huge Absolutely. Amount of money. And then I suppose as well, like if people, like you said, there's people out there who might be listening and they do feel lonely themselves, there is a national support line and a referral line there that is open 7 days a week. Alone operates it 365 days a year, 8 a.m. till 8 p.m. in the evening, 0818 222024. And Joanna, like, I suppose any other tips for people? You know, sometimes I think people are apprehensive because they don't want to, like, you know, be intrusive or, you know, look like the nosy neighbour going in. And what would you say to people like that?
Absolutely. I know we don't want to be feeling like we're offering help to somebody that could actually sweep the floor with us either at the same time. So I think it's just a knock, isn't it? Or a text if you can do that. Or just a nod, just an awareness. Just make sure that we're aware of what's going on in the neighbourhood around us, especially in the smaller rural communities. Although I have to say, the small rural communities seem to be an awful lot better at this than we are in the city even. Just to try to keep an eye out. And if you have concerns about somebody, but you don't feel like you're up to the job of intruding on that person, even, you can contact a loan and just drop an awareness into them, and they know how to handle these things. They're the professionals. They know what they're doing. So just be aware, share the warmth, invite somebody for a cup of tea, drop in, can I help you put up that Christmas tree? Anything at all. Just make the connection.
Okay, and like I said there, the Alone helpline is 0818 222024. That's 0818 222024. And if you do know of anyone who is alone this Christmas or needs some help, do make sure to pop into them and see how they're doing. 8 a.m. till 8 p.m. is the opening hours for that line. Joanna Donnelly, thank you very much. Alone ambassador there. Thank you.
Thank you. Now
we're switching to something a little different, but also someone in forecasting, head of forecasting at Met Erin, is Evelyn Cusack, and she is joining me now on the line to discuss the winter weather that is coming in this week. Evelyn, good afternoon.
Hi, hello there, how are you?
Very good. Evelyn, what should we expect? Is it set to be very wintry this week?
Well, it's going to get very cold, and nothing
horrendous, but very, very cold. We have, of course, have had very mild winters recently, so it's going to be a little bit of a shock to the system. I'm not saying it's actually pleasant now or anything, but it's going to get much colder. So I think by Thursday, for Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday and Monday. So it's going to be, you know, a little prolonged. It's not just going to be 1 or 2 days. So I think that's why, Met Aaron, we've issued that advisory, just sort of to warn people to be, you know, to get prepared.
And I see there's an Arctic air mass. What does that mean? Explain that
Arctic,
to...
It just means coming down from the Arctic.
Okay.
So it's Santa Claus paying us an early visit. Santa's sending down some of his air. So, you know, how we feel depends on where the air over Ireland comes from. So, you know how warm it's been, or, well, I won't say warm, but it has been very mild in November. And that's because the air mass was coming up from the south, coming up from Spain and up from the tropics.
Okay.
So now it's a switch around. It's going to be coming down from the Arctic, from the North Pole. So, but not to frighten people, but it never gets like really freezing here because the air is sort of modified by the sea around Ireland. You know, the sea temperatures are very high at the moment because we had a very mild autumn. So we don't expect a huge amount of snow, and certainly you're for Kildare. Now, Kildare actually can get snow on and off quite a lot compared to a lot of the country, but there may be some snow showers around, but we're not expecting anything major for Kildare for this week anyway. Maybe next week, maybe somebody else will come on to talk to you about next week, but certainly it's going to stay very cold for Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday and Monday, and severe frost. So for people travelling or that, especially on the minor roads, could be icy, you know, black ice after any showers, and maybe water trickles down the hills and that sort of thing.
Okay, so take care on the roads, but no snow expected this week. Potentially next week, Evelyn, early next week maybe, that we might get some snow. But this week, are we going to see like below, like minus three, minus four?
Yeah, very good. Yeah, no, it's going to turn very cold. So sort of the air temperatures dropping down to zero, or, you know, around zero during the day. They won't get too much above zero, maybe 1 or 2, but feeling certainly zero. And then at night time for, you know, Leinster, we're talking about -5, -6, -7. And maybe, you know, for the ground temperature, could be as low as -8 or -9, you know. So pretty cold. And there are icy conditions on roads. So it's not even obviously take care, but I would plan journeys more carefully and sort of try and avoid, and certainly rush hours and all that time. You know, it will be very tricky. And, you know, for anyone travelling, there will be dangerous driving conditions because the local authorities can't salt every single road in Ireland. I mean, they do a huge amount, but it's not possible to every, you know, road. All the main roads obviously will be well salted, etc. So there's a great website, winterready.ie. It's a Government of Ireland website, and it gives all the tips and preparations. And if anyone's out and about, they can get a booklet at the local library or the HSE as well, Winter Ready. So it's the Be Winter Ready campaign. So there's lots of good tips now. There's a few days to get ready for the cold weather.
Good advice there, Evelyn. It was this time about 6 years ago that I did not take your advice, and I actually turned over my car on a back road, on an icy back road. Thankfully, I was okay, but the car was gone. So, definitely, like you said, not all roads are salted, it can be very dangerous out there. Evelyn, thank you so much for coming on with us. Of course, we'll have to have the hot water bottles out now for the next few days.
Yeah, and they're just mentioning, you know, like people are worried, you know, about heating and all that. So I think the hot water bottle can be very useful indeed, because you can't have the heat on all night, you know.
No, a hot water bottle definitely is an essential thing. Evelyn, I'm sure you have one yourself, do you?
Yes, I do.
I think everyone in Ireland has a hot water bottle. They're not as popular in other countries.
Well, in fact, I used to joke with my daughter because some of her friends had fancy cars with heated seats, so I didn't. It was an old banger. So on really cold mornings, I might put a hot water bottle on the seat before I went to school. So that was our cheaper version of a heated seat.
Very good. I would have thought Evelyn Cusack would have had the heated seats now, I have to say.
Oh, wouldn't you think so? I'm actually even cycling now. I don't even have a car.
Oh, no. Do you heat a seat on the bike?
Oh, no, I wish. I'll tell you, I'm not really looking forward to, you know, with icy conditions, because I don't mind the rain cycling, but if the ice and obviously wind, it can be very dangerous. So, look, it's winter. What do we expect? So just as you said yourself there to everyone, take care, plan ahead. And as Theresa Mannion said, avoid unnecessary journeys. I'll quote Theresa.
There you go. Don't take unnecessary journeys. Yeah. Don't take risks on treacherous roads. Isn't that the advice?
Don't take any risks at all.
Evelyn,
very winter, yeah, into next week.
We'll see if we can get you maybe a pair of earmuffs and gloves to send up to Met Aaron, seeing as you're going to be cycling to work in minus five. Evelyn Cusack, of Head of Forecasting at Met Aaron, thanks very much for joining us. Thanks.